This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We are not suicide faces, so we are compelled to ask Nigeria, our leaders, are you still our leaders? Are we at war? How many more must die?
That was Bishop Emmanuel Badijo, Catholic Bishop of Oyo Diocese, on the latest two attacks on churches in Nigeria. Details coming up. Also, Ethiopia's Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed has condemned the killings of more than 200 people in the country's East Oromo region. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. A local commissioner for internal security in Nigeria's northwestern Kaduna state said gunmen attacked worshippers and local residents at two churches Sunday, killing three people and abducting several others. The incidents come amid growing concerns about the spate of attacks on churches in Nigeria. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Samuel Aruwan said roving bandits on motorcycles traveled to villages in the Kajuru region in Kaduna State. He said along the way, they attacked worshippers at St. Moses Catholic Church and Maranatha Baptist Church in the village of Rubu, opening fire and killing three people. Aruwan also said the bandits injured two others and kidnapped an unspecified number of people. Sunday's attacks come amid rising fears among religious organizations in Nigeria following recent attacks on other churches. On June 5th, heavily armed men with AK-47 rifles attacked St. Francis Catholic Church in Owo in the southwestern state of Ondo, killing 40 worshippers and injuring 87 others. Nigerian authorities blamed terror group Islamic State West African Province, or ISWAP. On Friday, during a mass burial for the victims, Catholic Church officials criticized the government's inability to secure the country. Bishop Emmanuel Badijo voiced his concerns.
By being Christians, we are not walking corpses merely waiting to be killed. We are not suicide cases. So we are compelled to ask Nigeria, our leaders, are you still our leaders? Are we at war? How many more must die?
The Associated Press cited the Christian Association of Nigeria as saying churches in Nigeria have become targets of armed groups. The deputy governor of Kaduna State, Hadiza Balarabe, condemned the latest attacks. No one has claimed responsibility. The national government has not commented on the latest incidents. Nigeria has been struggling to stem violence in its northeastern and northwestern regions for years. In late March, bandits attacked a moving train in Kaduna, killing 9 passengers and abducting 66 others. 51 of them have yet to be freed. With less than a year to go before Nigeria's general elections, citizens say they will focus on any candidate who is able to deliver on security promises made in the past but not fulfilled. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Ethiopia's Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed has condemned the killing of more than 200 people, most of them ethnic Amhara in the eastern Oromia region. Locals have blamed the killing Saturday on the rebel Oromo Liberation Army, which has denied the responsibility. Halima Atumani reports from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
The federal government has reportedly deployed security personnel to the Oromia region, but locals say it is not enough. Ahmed Hassan from the Amhara community lost his brother and sister-in-law. Speaking to VOA by phone, Hassan says that fighters circled their village and butchered the residents. According to him, the militia came with guns and machetes. Hassan says while there is calm in Oromia today, many families are too scared to bury loved ones. He says 250 dead. That's just in one village. There are too many who haven't been buried. He says families are afraid to bury them. In the afternoon yesterday, when we tried to bury our loved ones, there were lots of snipers shooting. We couldn't bury our family members. He says, we are not alive. We are waiting to die. In a tweet, Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed said the federal government's key priority is to restore peace and security in affected communities. He condemned the killings, saying the attacks on innocent civilians, destruction of livelihoods by illegal and irregular forces is unacceptable. Both the government and locals blamed the rebel Oromo Liberation Army for Saturday's attack. The group denies responsibility. Oda Tarabi, the group spokesperson, tells VOA it was government forces and the Oromia state-created militia Gashina Sirna, which means Shield of Order, that were near Gimbi town where the attack happened. He says it is not clear which armed group carried out the atrocity. Oda says many of those killed were not necessarily ethnic Amharas, noting that members of other tribes, such as the Oromo and Afars, are also residents of the town.
We are also wondering what transpired, what led to any shootout or any conflict between the local civilians and the government's forces. Of course, you know, it is very painful for us to hear about civilians, unarmed, living their lives, being killed in such a manner. There's a danger that as in this country will grow numb to these things and not even really take action or demand for justice.
The Oromo Liberation Army is calling for an independent investigation into the killings. Meanwhile, as more federal security personnel are deployed in Oromo to quell the violence, Prime Minister Abiy said there will be zero tolerance for horrific acts claiming lives. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
Leaders from East African countries are meeting in the Kenyan capital to decide whether to deploy regional troops against armed rebels in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. Fighting between the DRC's army and M23 rebels threatens to spread after the rebels recently seized new territory and the DRC accused Rwanda of supporting the rebels. Kinshasa has said it would not accept Kigali's participation in the East African Community force. Mohamed Yusuf reports from VOA's Africa News Center in Nairobi.
Kenya on Monday hosted leaders from the East African Community bloc for discussions on how to stop renewed fighting in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The insecurity in the region is heightening tension between Congo and Rwanda. Congo accuses its neighbor of supporting the M23 rebel group, a claim denied by Rwanda. M23 has fought for years to control rich gold and platinum mines found in eastern Congo, where other rebel groups from Rwanda and Uganda are also active. Tension moved higher recently when a Congolese army soldier was killed inside Rwanda after firing at security forces at the border post. Joel Baraka is a conflict and resolution researcher at the Paul Institute, a Congolese think tank. He says Congo's government sees the EAC as the best route for easing regional tensions. President Felix Tshisekedi, he says, is putting political trust and importance in the East African community to bring a solution to the crisis and peace in the Eastern DRC. He says Congo also sees Kenya as a mediator between the three countries, including Rwanda and Uganda. At the meeting in Nairobi, leaders will discuss sending troops from East Africa to help quell violence. Last week, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta called on deploying regional forces from EAC members, which include Burundi, Kenya, Rwanda, South Sudan, Tanzania and Uganda, and Congo, which joined in March. Researcher and political analyst Ntanyoma Rukumbuzi says the Congolese army cannot be left alone to solve the armed conflict in the country.
But in case this should will be a well-coordinated force under the watch of the UN, but also the AU, I would suggest that at some point we need to end the crisis in Eastern DRC. we won't expect the Congolese National Army to tackle by itself the crisis, because largely it's part of the crisis.
The regional bloc is considering a plan to deploy troops in three Congolese provinces, North Kivu, South Kivu and Ituri. Baraka says Congolese will not accept the troops in his territory. He says, I don't think people will accept the truce because there is some opposition to these forces in the parliament. Civil society groups are opposing it, and they won't accept any forces that involve Rwanda and Ugandan troops. Amani Tom, a social justice activist, agrees. He says regional leaders have denied his country peace. He says, we have security forces from the United Nations peacekeeping mission, and many times forces from Rwanda and Uganda come here to find peace, but there has been no peace. He says, I think for us to get peace in Eastern DRC, the entire country, hypocrisy from the Great Lake leaders must stop, and the economic war must stop so that we can build long-lasting peace. The humanitarian agencies say more than 25,000 people have fled from their homes, and 5,000 displaced persons and returnees fled to Uganda in the last 5 days. The security situation has made it difficult for aid agencies to assess the humanitarian needs of those affected by the conflict. Mohamed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
You are listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. I'm your host, Yehias Wuhib in Washington. We have a special reminder. Please note, we have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There, you will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. Namibian authorities say the southern African country is seeing a jump in rhinoceros poaching, with 11 killings this month alone. The dead rhinos were discovered in Namibia's Etosha National Park without their horns, which are worth tens of thousands of dollars in illegal Asian markets. Vitalo Angola reports from Windhoek, Namibia.
Many refugees in West Nile say conditions in the camps are deplorable and have opted to settle in urban centers. Most of them have found haven in Arua City and Koboko Municipality as self-settled refugees. Viola Nadia is a refugee from South Sudan, residing in Rhino Camp in northwest Uganda. She says some of the refugees are not used to living conditions in the camps, but can become self-reliant in towns.
Others were not used to this life here, so they decide to go to town and rent. Others, as me like this, I did not sleep in a grass-thatched house since I was born. But I have to bear it like that because it is a condition that our country has forced us to. So those ones who are going to the town, they have capital to do something.
Samuel Abey, originally from the Democratic Republic of the Congo, lives in Koboko Municipality. He says refugee policy grants them freedom of movement, and so they can stay in anywhere they like.
They've gone to town, some are trying to make businesses, some to make them survive. The ratio given to us cannot manage. So that's why you see us moving up and down, looking for our survival.
The number of urban refugees is said to have shot up at the beginning of this year. That's when Uganda's economy was fully reopened following 2 years of COVID-19 induced lockdowns. However, the influx of refugees into cities is said to be taking a toll on social services and budgets needed by urban governments. Jackson Atima is a member of parliament representing Arua Central in northwestern Uganda. He says the increased number of urban refugees has created competition for amenities and services between the new arrivals and host communities.
They end up concentrating themselves in the central division. So this actually makes our local population here to share the services that the government gives, the burden of the number of refugees who are settled here in the center is about 6,000. It gives a serious burden to other services like health, water we offer to the population here is actually constrained.
The leaders are calling for support for urban refugees. Patrick Bongo is an economist working with a non-government organization in Koboko Municipality. He says local governments need larger budgets to compensate for growing number of new arrivals.
The funding that the local governments are receiving from the central government is based on the population of nationals, yet the reality on the ground has a bigger population than what is budgeted for. And so that pressure is enormous, and so support from different partners to help the local governments respond to these critical needs so is certainly a better way of helping to minimize on the pressure.
Solomon Osakan is the Arua District Refugee Desk Officer in the Office of the Prime Minister. He says refugees can only be supported while in camps and that those who choose to live elsewhere are expected to be able to cater for themselves.
The Refugee Act provides that all refugees must reside in gazetted refugee settlements where services will be provided.
Statistics indicate that West Nile subregion in northwestern Uganda is home to over 800,000 refugees, mostly from South Sudan. 10,000 refugees are said to be self-settled in Arua City, while about 23,000 are in Koboko Municipality. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week. Right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Namibian authorities say the Southern African country is seeing a jump in rhinoceros poaching with 11 killings this month alone. The dead rhinos were discovered in Namibia's Etosha National Park without their horns, which are worth tens of thousands of dollars in illegal Asian markets. Vitali Angola reports from Windhoek, Namibia.
The CEO of Namibia's Save the Rhino Trust, Simpson Urikop, says the discovery of 11 poached rhino carcasses in the Etosha National Park cannot be regarded as an isolated incident. He said there is a rising demand for rhino horn, which has translated into higher incidence of poaching in Namibia. Urikop says he suspects organized criminals as behind the rhino killings.
It's difficult to point fingers on who it was, but I'm sure it is organized crime syndicates and part of the community because they are the ones who know the area. They are the ones who guide poachers from my experience.
The public relations officer at the Ministry of Environment, Tourism and Forestry, Romeo Munyunda, says police and the Namibian Defense Force will take action to protect the rhinos.
The Ministry of Environment, Forestry and Tourism, together with the Namibian Police Force, the NDF and other partners, will intensify wildlife protection and law enforcement interventions, including intensifying our patrols, security, intelligence gathering, especially in the Etosha National Park.
He asked the public to help authorities with the investigation into the killings.
To date, there is no arrest that has been made in this incident where the carcasses were discovered. Investigations continue in that regard. We call upon members of the public who may have information related to this or any other poaching incident or any other wildlife crime incident to come forth and report such kind of incidences.
A total of 22 rhinos have been killed by poachers in Namibia this year. Namibia is home to 1,500 to 2,000 black rhinos, about one-third of the world's black rhino population. The endangered species is targeted for its horn, which is used for ornaments, and it is alleged but unproven medicinal purposes in Asian countries. Vitalio Angula for VOA News, Windhoek, Namibia.
The International Fund for Agricultural Development says boosting investments to help small-scale farmers adapt to climate change is more critical than ever. The organization says small-scale farmers produce one-third of the world's food but receive only about 2% of global funds dealing with increased droughts and flooding. Mavis Ochera in Juwaso in the Ashanti region of Ghana has more on the story.
Ahmad Patterson is a fast lead for environment and climate change for West and Central Africa. He says the impact of climate change is visible in the Sahel region as countries have less capacity to adapt. He says the world has a moral responsibility to support small-scale farmers because they are usually not responsible for activities that create climate change. He says if the agricultural sector was modernized, it will attract young people and women. This would help close the gender gap and reduce poverty in rural communities. He says climate change has caused droughts, floods, locust invasions, and heat waves. This has impacted agricultural productivity, and the production of cereals like maize and rice has dropped. He says because of food shortages, Africa spends close to $70 billion every year to import food. Patterson says the need of small-scale farmers must be assessed before investments are made. He says his organization looked at how climate change affects yields, food insecurity, nutrition, and income. He says once risk is evaluated, low, medium, or high mitigation measures to fight climate change are sought.
For instance, when you have agricultural value chain, rice value chain, which is commonly produced in many countries in Africa, whether in a swamp valley, rain-fed or irrigated. Before even you sow your seeds, which kind of climate-resilient seeds you can promote. A certain number of techniques and technologies that need to be used for post-harvest. So in Africa, 60% of our production is lost because of post-harvest losses. And this also reduces at the end of the day, the volume of your production. And
he says the best way to boost investment to support small-scale farmers is through grants and loans at reduced rates. Patterson says his organization is helping African countries build their resilience to climate change, noting that none of them is able to adapt and deal with climate change. He says various governments are committed to averting the situation by building the resilience of small-scale farmers with the signing of various international conventions, including the Paris Climate Agreement and UN-backed Sustainable Development Goals. Patterson says governments are working to mobilize the needed resources from donors and from their budgets to implement their national adaptation plans.
So on a political level, they are advocating for rich countries to meet their pledge, because many rich countries pledged since 2015 that they will put $100 billion a year to support developing countries that are not responsible to climate change, but still, you know, those resources are not coming. It's still limited, and they are also calling upon those countries to pay what they have pledged, so at least developing countries can use it, like Africa, to build their resilience.
He says 37% of agricultural investments in Western Central Africa are climate-focused. The International Fund for Agricultural Development is committed to providing funding organizations that fight changing weather patterns. So he says the support goes from building climate-resilient roads to providing seeds and varieties that can withstand heat and drought, building warehouses and adapting good practices. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Ochery in Jaso in the Ashanti region of Ghana.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Audrius Regas, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.